You're listening to KFSK News for Tuesday, February 18th. I'm Olivia Rose. The Petersburg Borough Assembly will hear an annual report from the Petersburg Police Department at tonight's meeting. The report shows the number of arrests police made in 2024 was in line with the last couple of years at 81. And the report shows total calls to the police department went up slightly last year. The increased calls were mostly in categories like disturbance and citizen assist. There were noticeably fewer calls for welfare checks, criminal mischief, and burglaries than in past years. Many other categories, like motor vehicle accidents and harassment, remained roughly the same. But the volume of calls did go up considerably for animal-related problems, which the report notes includes bears. That's possibly because of a new measure the borough put in place a couple of years ago. It allows local law enforcement to fine residents who fail to properly secure their garbage. First offenders get a $50 ticket, then it's $150 for a second offense and $300 for a third. The fines give residents more incentive to call when there's a problem with garbage bears in their neighborhood. Police Chief Jim Kerr will go over his report in detail at tonight's assembly meeting at 6 p.m. in the assembly chambers. KFSK will air the meeting live and post a recording on our website, kfsk.org. Nearly 250 people gathered outside Petersburg's courthouse on Main Street yesterday to show support for federal employees who had recently been fired. An unknown number of U.S. Forest Service workers in Petersburg have lost their jobs in recent days. The rally was also organized to protest cuts to funding, federal funding, and, quote, diversity, equity, and inclusion discrimination. Petersburg's protest was one of many held around the nation yesterday. There were others in Alaska as well, including in Juneau, Ketchikan, Fairbanks, Adaltna, Wrangell, and Homer. KFSK's Hannah Floor went to the rally and has this audio postcard.
I'm Jeff Robinson. My sign says Tongass employees are bipartisan. I feel that's important because this is an impact we're going to feel in our community that's broad-reaching. It's going to affect federal contractors and federal employees alike. And those people, it doesn't matter who you supported for this election, we're all in this, and maybe for the first time in a while.
I'm Katie Homeland. I'm the Youth Program Coordinator and the founder of the Kinderskog Program. Our Forest Service workers and interns that come through have probably donated hundreds of hours worth of time to our program and our kids. After a lesson or an activity with Forest Service, it's like their face lights up and they're like, I can do this, like, as a job? This is like something we can do? And it's always like this amazing moment. No, we love our Forest Service friends. They're more than just federal employees. They're our neighbors. They're our friends, and they've woven themselves into our community in such an impactful and meaningful way. And for all of us to show up today and hopefully help remind them of that, because we're really grateful.
My name is Nathan Ajax. I was a fisheries technician with the Petersburg Supervisor's Office, and as of yesterday, I found out I was terminated from that position. I knew that it was coming already. It was just a matter of when, and it turned out that it was yesterday in the afternoon. I was still in a probationary period, so I knew that that I was on a sheet somewhere and that I would be one of the people affected by the blanket firing.
So what do you think is going to happen if the number of people who are fisheries technicians is reduced? How's that going to affect life in the Tongass?
It's going to negatively affect the habitat for fish, and that will have a direct result on the entire ecosystem.
I'm Celeste Fenter, and I was fired illegally for no cause. I'm an amazing employee that have worked 2 to 3 jobs the entire 23 years I've lived in Petersburg, and I will not put up with being fired or having that on my record because I am not a parasite. These are not parasites. These are the best and the brightest in this community, and every one of them is a person I would pick for my team first and foremost every time. Make this stop. Do better.
Hello, I am Waylon Jones. I'm 15 and I'm here today because I think that everybody should have rights and equity, and I think that the government isn't above the law and that we kind of broke away from a monarchy a long time ago and it's not time to go back.
And you're carrying an American flag. Can you tell me why?
Because, I mean, we live in America and, like, I do love this country. I just don't love what's going on in it right now. So, yeah.
I'm Chelsea Tremblay, and I was part of the team that organized this rally today. The goal was to give people a chance to speak out, to get the attention of our federal representatives, to let them know the risks that we're facing here in our community and the stakes.
Can you tell me what your experience as the organizer was being here with all these people?
It's funny coming to these events now as a mother to a toddler, because I'm chasing who's holding my cute baby, while also it feels like holding the hopes of so many attendees, because we all want to come away from this feeling better when we know this isn't going to change everything, but it can change something, and sometimes that has to be enough.
That was an audio postcard from a rally in Petersburg yesterday, organized to show support for recently fired federal workers. As the new chairman of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, Senator Lisa Murkowski was one of the featured speakers at the National Congress of American Indians Winter Summit in Washington, D.C. last week. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports, Senator Murkowski encouraged tribes to stand up for their rights.
The phrase was like an echo at the conference, repeated by leaders like Minnesota Congresswoman Betty McCollum.
Lisa Murkowski can't do this alone.
Senator Murkowski can't do it alone.
And that was Mark Macaro, president of the National Congress of American Indians. In a speech on the state of Indian nations, he addressed the elephant in the room.
I know tribal communities are debating how to respond to the actions of the new administration. Well, I strongly affirm it's time to speak up. It's time to stand up.
Macaro and other tribal leaders are worried about President Trump's executive orders, which target diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, and how they might threaten the ability of tribes to deliver services that are culturally sensitive and appropriate, services that can vary widely from tribe to tribe.
When it deals with DEI, what does that mean? We have been told by the administration it means one thing. I want to see the proof that Indian country really is not included in that.
McCollum is a Democrat and vice chair of the Congressional Native American Caucus. She says there is a bipartisan effort underway to protect tribal funding. And as chairman of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, Senator Lisa Murkowski is at the forefront.
When I'm home in Alaska, I am often introduced by my gifted name, which is Anshawatki.
Anshawatki means Lady of the Land in the Thlinkit language of Southeast Alaska. Murkowski says the name is both an honor and a responsibility. She told the group she's encouraged by a letter sent out by the Interior Department to clarify that the president's executive orders will not affect the government's treaty and trust obligations.
The federal government is charged with moral obligations of the highest responsibility and trust towards Native Indian tribes. And it's that trust responsibility that we're talking about here.
Despite the Interior Department's directive and another from the Health and Human Services Department, some tribes have had trouble accessing their federal money. Murkowski encouraged them to contact her committee so it can keep track. The senator also says she understands the administration's desire to make government more efficient.
But how we achieve it matters.
Murkowski says the administration needs to follow the proper channels and procedures.
They should not, they cannot, they must not undermine the obligations that we have to tribes, and they have to follow the law.
Murkowski drew the most response from the crowd when she compared the current political climate to boating in rough seas.
Those of us from Southeast know that choppy weather crops up. It can be really uncomfortable.
Murkowski hopes a letter she sent to the Office of Management and Budget will help calm things down. She says it urges OMB to immediately direct all federal agencies to recognize the political status of tribes.
In the meantime, I think we got people vomiting off both sides of the boat, and it's just kind of tumultuous now. So
Murkowski also noted that the president's new Department of Government Efficiency might take time out to learn from tribes who have saved millions through tribal compacting, a process in which tribes run their own health and education programs. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
As lawmakers continue to work through an education funding package, members of the House are turning to another priority for the session, reforming the retirement system for state and local government employees. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone has this look at a bill that would return public sector workers to a defined benefit pension system.
First things first, if you're thinking this looks anything like the state's prior pension systems, well, House Majority Leader Chuck Kopp says, think again.
This is structurally so different that it's barely recognizable. It'd be like comparing a rotten apple on an old tree to a robust pear on a living tree. They're both fruit, but it ends there.
For decades, the state provided a generous pension to public employees, like cops, teachers, firefighters, snowplow drivers, and so on. Over the years, though, lawmakers trimmed the program. Then, in 2006, the state closed it off entirely. Cops says that was due to poor advice from the state's contracted actuaries and a cover-up that wound up in court, and all resulted in state lawmakers badly underfunding the program and creating a spiral of unfunded pension and health care liabilities the state is still reckoning with years later. Lawmakers replaced the pension system with a 401k-style defined contribution program. In that system, the worker chips in a percentage of their paycheck. That's theirs to keep, regardless of how long they stick around. Then the employer puts in another fraction that's a little bit more restricted until 5 years in, when the employee is vested and can take that cash with them when they leave. Kopp says that's a powerful signal to the state's public sector workforce.
We've created a system that points to a value of leaving at 5 years. Beyond that, you don't have a value for retaining employees.
Kopp says it's showing up in retirement system data. Many workers are happy to skip town for higher paying jobs elsewhere.
90% of these withdrawals coming right after the 5-year mark or when someone was 100% vested. So employees are cashing out and moving on.
And Kopp says that means Alaskans miss out on some of the most productive periods of public servants' careers. Teachers, he says, are more effective after spending a few years in the classroom. Kopp, who is a retired police officer himself, says most officers take 2 years of on-the-job training before they can work without close supervision.
By the time you hit 5 years, you're becoming really valuable. And if those 5-year people are going to one of the other 49 states with a more competitive retirement program, which we'll hear from testimony that they are, that's a challenge.
Citing research presented to Senate lawmakers last year, Kopp says a new pension system would do better at retaining those mid and late career workers who know the most about how to do their jobs, whether that's running the engine room on a ferry or teaching a class of rowdy seventh graders. The system proposed in House Bill 78 builds on what advocates are calling a shared risk model. It would ratchet contributions up and down depending on how well the state's pension fund performs. So if it's looking like the pension fund is running short of its obligations, the employee and the employer would each have to contribute more. And retirees would shoulder some risk, too. The state could withhold inflation adjustments on pension payments to keep the plan solvent. Kopp says it borrows from the lessons of other pension systems in states around the country.
We believe this plan will be the most risk-averse retirement plan in the country.
The plan is getting a hard look from House lawmakers. One question is how much the plan would cost, and that will likely be a big subject of debate in the weeks to come. Last year, different estimates from different sources with different assumptions and different methodologies came to, you guessed it, wildly different results. They ranged from, it'll basically come out in the wash every year, to more than $1 billion over a decade plus. But another area of skepticism is over whether a pension would actually make a dent in the state's struggle to hire and retain workers. Ketchikan Republican Representative Jeremy Bynum, who led the electric division of Ketchikan's public utility, says the retirement plan wasn't the main factor driving turnover.
The biggest issues that drove employees where I was at away was the cost of living in the community. It was being able to afford their home. It was being able to make sure that their kids had a good school to go to and that their schools were taken care of. It was the remoteness of being in Alaska.
The bill is a priority for House leadership and for Kopp personally. Kopp says his predecessor's refusal to advance a pension bill was the biggest factor pushing him to run for office again. Senator Kathy Geisel, an Anchorage Republican who shepherded a pension bill through the Senate last year, says she expects the Senate to take a closer look at the bill once it passes the House. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.